adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario!
Convoy, welcome to Rated This Way, a calcio podcast that brings the latest and greatest news from the world of Serie A and European soccer. My name is Michael D'Angelo, and with us, as always, we have Paolino Bologna Mangoni.
Welcome back, everyone.
We've got a Mr. Chris Pacelli.
Hello, everybody.
We've got Gigi Julian D'Angelo.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Oh, God, don't ask, Julian.
Hey, listen, we don't live downtown.
Downtown.
Oh, God. We should say, I mean, just again, for the listeners who are not in Ottawa or Canada or anything, who maybe just living under a rock, there is a convoy of truckers, so-called truckers, that are protesting vaccine mandates, et cetera, et cetera. And they made it to Ottawa. They're making noise and they're making a lot of we don't know, again, if it's what kind of faction has kind of worked into Ottawa, but they're just making camp in our downtown and kind of ruining our fun, I guess, of the COVID pandemic. So we thought we'd commemorate it with, of course, C.W. McCall and Convoy.
Convoy.
Anyways, what a friggin' waste of time. I think that's all we'll spend on the convoy. We'll forego any conversation with that, just outside of,
you know, we wouldn't want to defecate about it, right?
Well, defecate, oh my God, Paul. That's what they're doing on the monuments that we're trying to Listen, this convoy is not a freedom convoy, as they're saying. It's more of a freedom, D-U-M-B.
Okay, let's move on. Let's move on.
Right? Huh?
Let's move on.
Was that good?
I thought mine was better, but let's move on.
Yours looks not shit about it, I think. Okay, yeah, that's fair.
Okay, there you go. That's good.
All right. Wow, okay. Well, it's the end of the transfer window, so this show will for sure get into that. We'll get into kind of winners, losers, major signings, of course, obviously. Outside of that, we've got no Calcio to go over, but we will go over perhaps the Canada result, because Canada has played against USA this past week in a big game for their qualification for Qatar. We'll also get into, just preview kind of the culture that is going to be upcoming. And of course, we'll get into a kind of a who am I discussion in the second half of the show. But why don't we start with those transfers then? So, Paulo, what kind of tactics do you want to go about here?
All right, so I'm just going to list off the top transfer for each club, okay? Because they're also be on for the whole hour, 90 minutes, listing off every single transfer. And then we'll discuss winners and losers of this January transfer market. So let's start from A to V, as it is. So for Atalanta, it's Boga from Sassuolo on loan for now, and then an option to buy. Mm-hmm. Bologna, there wasn't really any incoming transfers, but the most notable transfer per se is they sold Skov Olsen to Bruges, Club Bruges. Cagliari, they brought in Lovato on loan from Atalanta. Empoli, they brought in Valerio Vera on loan from Samp. Fiorentina. Obviously, it's Cabral from Basel for 14 plus 2 million. And then for me, for Genoa, is Piccoli on loan from Atalanta. For Hellas Verona, DePaoli on loan from Samp. For Inter, it's Gosens from Atalanta. Of course, Juventus, it's Vlahovic from Fiorentina. Lazio, it's Cabral Borges, or Borge, from Sporting on loan. And then Milan, it's the only one of note, Latic from Red Star Belgrade. Napoli as well, the only one of note is Tuan Zebe on loan from Manchester United. For Roma, it's obviously Sergio Oliveira from Porto. Salernitana, honestly, there's a lot of them. I don't know if I can pick out one, maybe Sepe from Parma. Let's put that
interesting.
One.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of them. Like,
there's a few,
I can name four. They had 12 incoming.
Wow.
Yeah. And then Sampdoria, let's say Sensi if he stays healthy. We came in on loan from Inter. Sassuolo. Sassuolo is more of a futures market. Let's put it this way. Moro, Luca Moro from Padova, but he was on loan and will stay on loan at Catania. Spezia, they didn't have any, so I'm pretty sure they still have a transfer ban on incoming transfers.
Perhaps.
Look that up. And then for Torino, it's Ricci from Empoli for 8 plus 2 million. Udinese, it's Mari from Arsenal on loan. And then Venezia, it's, for me, it has to be Nani on a free transfer. I think that's spot on. So then I'll open up to the floor. Who do you think had, like, the winner and losers of – we'll go with winners. So since Michael's researching, you know, Julian starts.
I mean, I think regardless of who our biases are, I think Juve is the clear winner of this transfer market. Vlahovic, you got Zakaria, but honestly, most importantly for them was they were finally able to offload some of their players. Now, saying that, I'm going to be interested to see how the players integrate into the team, if it'll take them a little bit of time. So it's not like the summer window where they can usually train with the team for a month or two. Like, they're going to be in the squad on Saturday or Sunday. I don't know when you will play. But Vlahovic should be fine. Zakaria, is it Zakaria or Zakaria? Do we know where?
I feel like Zakaria.
Okay.
That's Zakaria. Right.
But, like, he may have a bit of, it may take him a few games to get used to the league. You know what I mean? We've seen that before with players. But regardless, I think they were the clear winners. Again, I think Inter had a solid transfer window as well. The Gosens signing is huge. I think that kind of solidifies your left wing for the next 3, maybe even 4 years. Caicedo coming in on loan is just to kind of shore up that striking position with Sanchez and Correa. One of them always seemed to be hurt. Losers. Sorry, Chris. I got to throw Milan in here. Just because they didn't do anything. Like, they're in a Scudetto race and they literally didn't really do much to strengthen the squad. Beyond that, I know some people may say Fiorentina, but I think they actually had a solid window. Yes, losing Vlahovic is going to hurt. We'll see how Cabral does to replace him, but I don't think it was similar, in my opinion, to Inter and Lukaku in the summer. They're getting 80 million for him. They're going to reinvest that money probably in the summer, so I think they'll be okay.
Just to confirm, yes, so Spezia are, they have a 4-window, I think, transfer ban, but this is, I think, the first one, because I think they were allowed to operate last summer.
Okay.
But now they go into their 4-window transfer ban. So that's, again, to your point, that's why.
God, harsh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was the same thing when, it was during the same time period where Man City had their own troubles with UEFA, and yet Spezia was the one that was, like, you know, focused on. But yeah,
mm-hmm.
But Julian, I like what you said about Inter. I think excluding Juventus, I think Inter had the best transfer window, as you said, they focused on problem areas that most likely will become problem in the future. By that, I mean Perisic. Now they have leverage in negotiating with Perisic.
Yeah, and have, I mean, yep. He wants, just for those who don't know, Perisic is looking for $6 million a season to re-sign. Keep in mind, the guy's 32. I love Perisic. If we were in the Prem, I'd say sign him. But Inter can't afford to sign him to that contract.
I mean, $6 million is what you give to, like, a top midfielder.
Yeah, exactly. As I would love him to stay, I know Inter's still trying to negotiate, get him to kind of lower those demands, but I don't know if he will.
Wait, Michael, confirm. Wasn't that $6 million? Wasn't that, like, what Ramsey was getting?
Ramsey salary. I thought he was making like 7.
Either way.
Let's look. Yeah, yeah. 7 million euro. That was his salary.
So there you go. So he wants what, almost what, you know, Ramsey was getting paid at Juventus to sit on the bench.
And just then, put it this way, for Inter, yeah. They're Çalhanoğlu is making 6, Brozovic is making 6, Barella, they just re-signed, I think, 2-5?
I think 5.
Yeah, so that's, 6 isn't going to happen for Perisic, unfortunately.
Okay, so since I always discuss the Mourinho effect, I thought Roma had a good transfer window. They brought in a midfielder that they desperately needed. They brought in a winger as well. They got rid of Mayoral and Villar. And the only blemish I have to say is that they couldn't get rid of Diawara. I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
I don't know. I'm sure they would have liked to, but I don't know if you need to say it's a blemish. I mean, they still got a lot done, considering. So it's just one of those kind of nice to haves. Just to kind of touch on the general, the question in general. I mean, I think anytime, you know, you say who had the best transfer window, most people, you know, you look at, okay, who's the best player that was brought in, which club did he go to? And you kind of pick them. So I think it's fair to say Juve won because Vlahovic was the best player brought in into Serie A. And, he's at Juve, so fair enough. I think Boga has the potential to be one of the most impactful transfers. And, you know, a few weeks ago when it was, I think it was just a rumor at this point, we were talking about Boga to Atalanta. And, you know, I kind of mentioned how they don't really have a player of that profile. I know I also added that I don't know where he best fits within Gasperini's system. Obviously, it's going to be somewhere in that front three, but I'm curious to see how it plays out because we know Atalanta is an attack-minded club and he's definitely a player with a lot of attacking ability. So I think long-term, you know, he might have a substantial impact on Atalanta. The other small shout-out I just want to give to is Sampdoria. Now, again, no major players going in there, they're never going to attract that type of talent. But I think for them to get Sensi and Conti is big, just in that, for me anyways, those are two players that can come in and start. The question mark, of course, is their health, right? Sensi, as we know, has barely played for Inter, and Conti, same thing with Milan. So if those players can stay healthy, I think for Sampdoria, that will help kind of push them up the table slowly anyways.
Okay, I'm glad that you brought up Sampdoria, though. So, because I remember Gianpaolo, I think it was after the last game before international break, mentioned the fact that they had to change formations or formation because they don't have a lot of wingers and that their only winger, or the only true winger, is Kondreva. So they brought in 2 center midfielders. So do you think that will help in terms of getting the tactics right for Gianpaolo?
It's possible. He usually prefers kind of playing with like a 4-4-2, but it's a narrow diamond in midfield. So I'm not surprised that midfielders were brought in if that's the case. And Conti would benefit from having more room on the outside channels to kind of run up and down. And since he's pretty dynamic, I think he can play in most systems. So time will tell if these transfers were tactical transfers as well.
Okay. What about your losers?
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Again, same to how...
Say it, Chris.
I will. I have
say the line, Chris.
similar to how when you're picking, you know, who won the transfer window, you pick who had the best player. Obviously, like Julian said, Milan's pushing for Scudetto, and they, for all intents and purposes, didn't bring anybody in. No disrespect to Lastic or the Irish kid we brought in. I don't remember his name. Forgive me. But
I don't know why, but the name Collar Callahan is coming in my brain.
It's something along the Callahan lines. But yeah, they didn't bring in anybody.
Michael, Cork City, if you're looking it up.
They didn't bring anybody in who can, you know, significantly impact the first team. I know the reports are saying Lazetic is going to be with the first team, but I don't know how many minutes he's going to take away from Ibra, Giroud, Rebic, Leao, and them. So disappointing, but at the same time, I expected it, as much as it, as shitty as it is to say that. I know there isn't really money available. We would have had to make a big sale to be able to afford anybody. So shitty transfer window, yes, but I know I expected it, so I'm not that disappointed.
Catal Heffernan.
Heffernan.
That makes sense?
From Cork City.
Cork City, that's it.
Yeah. So, yes, Juve winners because of Vlahovic, but I think Boga long-term could have the biggest impact, and then Milan losers by virtue of not bringing any first-team players in.
Let's see.
Yep.
Okay, Paul, should I go?
Yeah, go ahead. No, I was about to ask you.
Okay, I want to say, I mean, yeah, I think I don't want to go with a clean sweep here, but Juventus, but not for, I mean, Vlahovic is obviously a very good deal, but I am looking at this window as being transformational in getting rid of so much dead weight. And they literally almost had a perfect window, save for perhaps getting rid of one or two other players. But maybe those players can provide Allegri with, I don't know, some more, and he sees their value. But you know, getting rid of Rodrigo Bentancur, getting rid of Ramsey, we talked about in Ramsey, getting rid of Kulusevski, those are massive moves. Bringing in Zakaria is big because, again, at least you're providing a replacement player, again, to at least sub in for those guys who you've taken out of the midfield. But I'm hopeful that, you know, shedding that dead weight will allow them to perhaps just, again, form a proper midfield that isn't made up of bandages. And that's really what it was going into the season. And again, it's sensational how they managed to do it. I don't know how. I mean, really, you look at it and you say, okay, well, I mean, a lot of people have been saying this, but Paratici is at Tottenham and he got rid of two of them, Bentancur and what's his name?
Kulusevski
to Tottenham is already...
I forgot his name, eh?
Yeah, that's it, exactly. But I mean, Kulusevski is still young. He still has a lot... in his career that he can do. I just feel like he never had the opportunity at Juventus, or he never seized it anyway. Because, I mean, you look at a player like Chiesa who came in and was dominant right away. Kulusevski, again, was strong for, where was he, Parma before that?
Yeah.
And he was, again, he was a very good talent. On a Parma side that, again, had no business having a talent as good as Kulusevski was. But, again, he was probably more pivotal in that role than he would have been at Juventus, and that really hindered, I think, his development. So if you're going somewhere and you're able to kind of shake off that rust and be kind of a leading character, maybe Tottenham is going to be able to provide that for him, that's great. I hope he does well. As for Bendiker, he can fuck right off. Ramsey going to Rangers, good riddance. Yeah, I think it's exciting for those reasons. I think Juve really had a really good, again, shedding of that dead weight, and Vlahovic is just the cherry on top of what's been a really tough, I guess, go in the first half of the season. It's hopefully going to be better. We'll see if they can make up some ground on the top four, because they've also did really well. And that was enough about Juventus. I talked about them a lot. I want to say that Inter had a good window as well. I agree, for all the reasons that you guys listed. And yeah, just a quick shout out to Salernitana for just making noise. I love that. I love just the mixing it up. That's it.
Okay, so just to kind of add to your points, Michael, they got rid of, well, they had to get rid of Ramsey by paying 30% of his salary.
Good, fine.
I think we mentioned last week, the Boca transfer fee, well, the future fee that they'll receive from a transfer was 30%. And then the Kulusevski is a loan for $5 million, and then I think it's an obligation.
It has the potential for an obligation. So if it meets certain criteria, which I think includes UCL and appearance number.
Yes, yeah.
But exactly. It's I'm not sure how easy it is going to be to meet that threshold, but I guess the UCL part is probably the most important part for that. Yeah. But that's the stipulation.
Yeah, exactly. So, and as you said there, Michael, Salernitana. Okay, so I have the top four. So I already mentioned Sepe because they needed. Julian said, was it Vidbelic, right? Had the most saves in the league, but some of them he made like simple mistakes. If you actually look at some of the goals that they conceded, so getting a goalkeeper was a good move. They got Verdi from Torino. Another one who can play on the wing and not a replacement for Ribery, could even play alongside Frank Ribery. They got a Dragosin from on loan from Juventus, mm-hmm. who's on loan at Sampdoria, and they got Fazio as well. So they essentially got another their two starting center backs, a winger and a goalkeeper. So we'll see if this changes their trajectory for this season. I highly doubt it because it's mostly just unwanted players from bigger teams. So I'm skeptical. And the team that I did not mention for losers is Lazio.
Yeah, I can see that.
They brought in a striker to replace Murishi, literally like hours before the end of the transfer window.
And I would argue as well, Napoli as well. It should be a part of that group because yes. what did they really do? And they lost Insigne this summer, effectively.
Yes. But
through this window.
More than that is the only, well, they got a center back, which was important because they needed someone else other than Koulibaly as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case one of them goes down again, like they usually do, like Napoli's center backs drop like flies. But they needed a left back because Mairi is not good enough. I think we all can agree with that. They were looking to bring in, I think it was another Oliveira from, I think it was Matthias? No. Anyway, from Getafe. Last name Oliveira from Getafe. They could have brought him in January, which I thought would have made an impact at least because they would move Mairi out of the lineup. But most likely, if it wasn't done now, they're going to have to do it in January for probably like half the price because they wouldn't even want to fork up 10 million euros for a better left back than Mario Rui. So.
Just another note while we what did you say before, defecated on?
Yes.
Milan. I do want to say, yes, that they didn't do much. But, Chris, I want to give them credit because, again, they obviously have some sort of plan that they're sticking to. And as I guess, tempting it would be to make a splash in a market, they really, again, they have a very business-focused approach. And I can appreciate that. And I think that's the right thing to do for a team who does not want to get into the business of losing money. They want to make sure, okay, we have a book that is well balanced. Let's maintain that. Let's gather as much as we can, you know, kind of through Champions League qualification, etc. And then we can really aim to bolster a squad eventually with, you know, some really key players. But, you know, outside of that, we already have a pretty young, good core of players. So I think they didn't do anything now. So if we have to say through the 31 days of January, yeah, sure, they didn't really have a great window. But again, I just want to make sure that we are all aware that they still have the right approach for themselves, and I think that's important to note.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And I, just to go back to what I said earlier, like I wasn't expecting anything, just because for the reasons you just mentioned, they are being, you know, conscious of the budget. And again, if there aren't any big sales happening, then it will be hard for them to justify spending money on bringing players in. The last thing I do want to say, and I wouldn't go as far as saying Fiorentina won, because I think anytime you lose your best player, it's, you know, a tough pill to swallow. And sorry, Tito and Viola Nation, but I do want to say, I think having Piontek already there, having Ikone there, and then getting Cabral all for less than 40 million, I think, total. I know Piontek's technically a loan right now. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a loan. So between Ikone, Cabral, and you know, the little fee they're paying for Piontek, it's less than 40 million. So I think that's money well spent there. It adds to the depth, and Ikone and Cabral are both younger. So obviously, again, tough to lose Vlahovic, but some nice replacement pieces there.
Remember, it's 70 plus 10 for Vlahovic.
Right.
Bonuses, so, yeah.
Yeah. No, you know, Michael, I'm glad you brought up Milan and in terms of the financial aspect. I just want to congratulate Milan for winning the 2021-2022 Scudetto del Bilancio. Thank you. So congratulations, Milan.
Thank you.
Anyway, Michael.
Okay, yeah, that if we have gone through everything, I think that really kind of solidifies our transfer window for the January part of that, at least. It's going to be interesting this summer, I think, when we get to, you know, see where everything kind of shakes out with the rest of the season, see how teams perform. It'll be, again, there's going to be a dogfight, I think, for a lot of these teams leading up to the end of the year here. So it's going to be interesting to see what they determine is the next step for their development as a squad. Because again, you know, Inter needs to, they have to offload some players as well, which I think some of them are coming to the end of their contract. But again, how do you manage your depth at that point? Because that's really what you need to look for if you're going to become what looks like what's, I guess, looking like it's going to be a repeat Scudetto for them. Again, what do they do to maintain and try and make it three in a row? Milan, again, they've made their point. They have a very savvy approach to things. They're not going to be bossed around by players who demand outrageous salaries. Okay, well, how are you going to take this team to the next level if, again, you maintain that top four position and if you fall out of that top four position? And then Napoli, again, really need to do something because they're losing the captain of their team. So it's, again, there's so many questions that are going to come out of the inaction or action following this window. So it's, again, I think we're in for a really good treat in the next 6 months.
I have a question. So, you know, outside of the top teams, okay, who was your favorite transfer? I'll start just as an example. I thought Ricci to Torino from Empoli for 8+2 to be was one of the better moves outside of the top clubs.
That's a good shout.
Yeah.
Give me a second here.
Yeah, go ahead. I can go next. I was actually kind of hoping Inter would make a cheeky bid for Cabral. I know we mentioned last episode I was kind of keeping tabs on him, just because I suppose he chose on loan at Basel. And the guy literally was having goal or an assist or both in every single game this year. So I'm interested to see if that'll transfer over to Serie A as well. And I'm also a little excited because now that frees up some more playing time for Esposito.
Go ahead, Mike.
For me, I think I just like, again, just like Salernitana and their kind of will to to stay in the top flight, and they're kind of grasping at, hey, let's bring in whatever mercenaries we can. I liked the addition by Venezia to bring in Nani. I think that's such a, again, it's a low risk, high reward play by them. And I think, again, if it works out, maybe they do maintain, what are they now, 17th position?
Let's see. Yeah, so that's they're just outside.
So just 1 point ahead, right? So let's see if they can stay out of that zone. And again, maybe I'm hopeful that Nani can be that person to make sure that, you know, save some points when the points are at risk.
To give Chris extra time to think, I think I neglected to mention that General brought in 9 players in this transfer window as well.
Mamma mia.
Yeah, so that's another, and I think I mentioned last week as well, the German sporting director, and his name is Spores, it seems like to me like he's playing Moneyball, bringing in players from Belgium, Holland, and Switzerland on very cheap prices, you know, no more than 3 or 4 million euros, and have already kind of changed the team per se. I mean, they you know, the last game that they played was a 0-0 draw against an Udinese team who was already, you know, set up, and said, you know, you had a new manager to come in, and they already picked up a point. So I'm looking. That's another team to look out for, and they got rid of Pandev.
Yeah, I was gonna say, didn't they offload Pandev?
Yeah, they sent it to Parma.
Yeah.
So, all right, go ahead, Chris.
I could probably dig deeper into this, but Pablo Mari from Arsenal. I know it's only on loan, but going to Udinese. And I'll reiterate, you know, what I said last week, which is just that I thought, for me anyways, Udinese's weakness was that back three. I found it difficult for them to put out 3 solid center backs. So I think he slots right into that starting lineup, solidifies one of the positions. I don't know if he plays in the middle of the three or on the outside, but either way, I think that's a big boost for them. Just with the way they play, which usually on the counterattack, they do soak up quite a bit of pressure. So having a higher quality center back that can deal with those 50-50 balls, those balls in the air, I think will help Udinese kind of scrape out those games that we've kind of seen them do so far this year. So not a high profile name by any means, but kind of suits the player, suits the club, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Just one last shout for winner of the window, TFC Insigne. They're bringing in Mimo Crescito. And then there's someone else.
Well,
and there's a potential of Jovenko going back as well, I think, right?
Well, he's already in the training camp. Yeah.
And he's still kicking tires on Belotti.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. Yeah. Okay. That's it. That's all then. Why don't we take a quick break? And when we come back, we've got. We've got, obviously, Who Am I coming up. We've got some previews to get to as well. And, we've got lots more show. So, again, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. Back to the show. Paulo, there you go. It's the last time you're going to hear it for...
Until June.
Until June. Yeah. There you have it. Yeah. Rafael Acara.
Speaking about good Italian music...
Sanremo?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, see. Starts tomorrow. Starts Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah. Starts this week. So it's the entire week until the 6th.
Did you place your bet yet?
You know what? I think I'm going to do that. I'm waiting until the last second to do it. I think the book closes
tomorrow
afternoon. Yeah, Tuesday afternoon.
Make sure of that, because it might be because they. What time would they air it?
Well, it starts at 9 p.m. Italian time.
Yeah.
So.
And then your winnings are going to a lucky listener?
No. For those who are interested, Jen and Randy's 26-1 to win.
That's good odds.
I think Mascherini is 20-1, something like that. And the favorite is Mahmoud and Blanco. So I think they're a duo this year.
Interesting.
Yeah. Then there's also Aliza, I think, is another favored, I think 5-1 mm-hmm. or something like that. So,
yeah.
But what's interesting, it's shot in the dark. You don't really know the songs until they actually perform it live, unless you listen to the I think it's the open tryouts or something like that, like the tryouts,
right.
Or warm ups, I think they call it. But even then, you don't really know, unless they leak it, like what happened last year, I think what that was, which created a whole. Scandal
thing,
yeah, thing. So
did Måneskin I know they were part of it last year, but they won Eurovision. Did they win Sanremo as well?
Yeah, they won. Yeah. Yes, so they won Sanremo, which gives them the right to
go to Eurovision.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
They beat Fedez in the final,
right?
Or well, they were 1-2.
Yeah, I'm glad that Fedez didn't win.
Well, rightfully, because obviously then they wouldn't have won Eurovision.
Well, the reason why it was Fedez that actually leaked the song as well. So I think people were probably guessing that it gave him an edge when it came to the final results. And, you know, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised, especially with that type of leakage and things like that. He's known to kind of skirt the rules and things.
Is he an Inter fan?
No, but Amadeus is. The host.
Amadeus.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, he gets, like, Ibra in last minute as well. You know, it goes from Tuesday to Saturday, and Ibra's injured, so. wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, we forgot to mention that in the transfers that Ibra went to Sanremo.
Yeah.
Loan.
One week loan
to Sanremo.
A week-long loan. Okay, anyways, what a fucking terrible way to start the second half here. We're just bored as shit now.
It's a good interest. Sanremo, like, takes up oxygen.
Yeah.
For, like, you know, the entire week. It's just something to look forward to, you know, all year. It's a good start to the year, in my opinion.
And there hasn't been anything to bet on for Paulo for a week and a half now. So at least now.
Struggling.
He can ease his way back into
honestly,
culture.
Honestly, I'm struggling without Serie A soccer right now. Like, struggling.
Yeah.
Like, it's been tough for me.
It's coming back. Yeah, and you know what else is coming back? Let me tell you. It's actually coming back with a bang, because there's a Milan Derby this weekend.
There you go.
See.
And, yeah. Julian, yeah. Are you excited about that?
I'm always excited.
Is that on Saturday? Saturday at noon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the 2:45 game.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons, they, you know, usually they now they have a tendency to avoid putting the marquee games at night.
Yeah, well, it's prime time.
Yeah, prime time where, at night in Italy?
In Italy.
Yeah.
It'll be 6 o'clock.
Yeah, but like in China, it would be what? The next day, no?
I don't know. I'm not sure what the difference is. Let's see.
I think they're 12 or 13 hours from us, so they'd be another 6 or 7 ahead of Italy, I want to say.
So 12 noon, our time, would be 1 a.m.
In
China.
Yeah, so there you go. That's another reason why, because if they put the game at 2:45, it would be, what, 3 a.m. Beijing time.
Yeah, I guess, which is even later in the middle of the night. Hey, whatever grows the game, I'm happy for it. In any case, that's happening this weekend. And in commemoration of this massive game, and actually it is a Scudetto, I guess, has heavy Scudetto implications, this game. But again, in honor of that, of course, we have our Milan jersey giveaway, courtesy of resident Milan fan Chris Pacelli.
Yeah, still another week to go or so. So yeah, retweet, like, tag a friend, and we'll pick the winner, or we'll announce the winner on next week's episode. So I think we're looks like we've got close to 30 retweets now.
Yeah, so it's follow, retweet, and tag a friend.
There we go. You can tell who put the giveaway together.
You can tell who controls the Twitter.
I just secured the goods.
That's it.
The Derby della Celanoglu.
That's right, eh?
Well,
okay, that leads me into like my question. Just because again, we're far out from the game, and usually news doesn't filter out until Thursday. So, in your guys' opinion, do you think? Well, do you think Gosens will start? That's why I wanted to go to Julian. Do you think the new signings will play?
No, Gosens, I think, is actually still hurt until end of February, is the rumors. Caicedo, I think, will be on the bench, whether or not he features. I mean, it depends how the game goes, obviously. But yeah, I'm pretty sure Gosens is still out. I think they're saying the end of February. He's supposed to miss the first Champions League game as well.
Well, Chris, what about Milan's big signing?
Yes. I mean, at this point, it's really just about getting guys healthy again. So if Rebic and Leao are healthy, then I'll take it. Calabria's healthy. Kessie left. I'm pretty sure Ivory Coast are out of AFCON.
But isn't he injured, though?
And that's what I was going to say. And he left that game injured. So I haven't heard on the extent of that injury yet, but I would assume he won't be healthy enough, at least to start for the game. So
I wouldn't be surprised if some of those players will get help back as they're coming back, just in case of COVID stuff. They might even have COVID, but I'm curious to see what kind of testing goes on after that.
I also marked that down in my notes. We'll see what COVID
implications.
Exactly, has an impact on this game. Julian, would you agree that Inter is a favorite for this game? Because the last Milan derby, it seemed to be that Milan was the more informed team. Inter was kind of building it into itself, struggled to kind of to create chances. But now it seems like the script has flipped.
I don't know if you can say... I don't know. Favorite's a strong word. I don't even know. Again, this would be me playing it down, and you guys can call me out on that. I don't know if you can point at a clear favorite in this game.
Well, honestly, just based on form. Milan's struggling.
Based on form, then yes. But the international break kind of gives Milan time to regroup, especially for the European players, right? Like, Yeah, they had their training camps or whatever you want to call it, but they didn't actually have to play any games. So we'll see. Like, I know Lautaro is still with Argentina. I guess he might actually be one of the only ones.
I'd say that the team that has one loss in the season is probably the team that is the favorite going into
it. That's fair.
Yeah, I have no problem saying Inter are the favorites. I think, like Paulo said, they're in form. And, again, I'm assuming Milan will still not be at full health. I'm assuming somebody's going to have some sort of knock. So I definitely just give the edge to Inter. Again, not a huge edge. I obviously still think it will be a competitive match, but I would consider Inter the favorite going into this.
What we do have to remember, though, is that Milan are playing at home.
Yes. Big advantage.
Big advantage in that 50% capacity.
Actually, I think technically, if I'm not mistaken, Inter are technically the home team this go-around.
I was going to say something. It was... okay, yeah. So if we go on the hypothesis that Inter are favorites... do you think an Inter win knocks Milan out of the Scudetto chase?
No.
What? No?
No, I don't think so. Not yet. I mean, Inter, that would push Inter to 56 points, and Milan would be at 49. it's Inter not.
Still have a game in hand, though.
It's true. It's not unheard of, though. I mean, didn't? It's less likely. Of course, it is. I mean, just by fact of them making that gap even bigger, even larger. But I would say it's not over yet. It's not over until mathematically it's done.
Okay. I those are all my questions that I had for all of you.
Julian, do you think it would be? Just curious.
I mean, I don't want to jinx them, but yeah, I think especially the game after against Napoli, if Inter win their next two, I think honestly, I think that's it. It would be a monumental collapse for them not to win.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll see how it goes, but and I know there's still, at that point, there'd still be like 17, 18 games. So, I mean, yeah, anything can happen. But for Inter to blow that lead, that would be
hilarious. What is it? Is it 30? Is it 38 games?
38 games.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're at 20. They have 22 now. So, what's that remaining? 16 games.
Okay. So, we tried to avoid talking the Juventus perspective, but I'm hoping for draws in the next Inter's next two games.
You're trying to catch up to first place there.
Yes, exactly.
Wouldn't you want them to lose then?
Well, no. Then if Milan wins, it wouldn't make a difference. Milan would.
But if you're trying to catch first, it would.
Exactly. Yeah. You should want probably Inter lose both, so that Milan and Napoli will theoretically be tied on points, although one back of Inter, so that that gap doesn't expand for yourself.
Yeah, but if Inter drops 2 points in each of those games, and then Juventus win both the next two games, they gain 4 points on first place.
But what if they lost both games, Inter, and Juventus gained 6 points on first?
Yeah, but then Milan and Napoli would also gain on first place as well.
Okay.
That's my point.
They'll have to leave those teams either way.
Yeah, but
so it doesn't matter if they're at 52 or whatever. The points that they need to exceed at this point are 53.
We can argue this for like a good 20 minutes, but anyway.
We could, or Chris could chime in as well.
No, I would just say that if Inter win, I agree with Julian, it would be a monumental collapse for Inter not to win. Again, they also have the game in hand, and I know they're still in Europe, but the gap at that point is significant, and it would take, you know, a 4 or 5 game losing streak from Inter for Milan to catch up. So, an Inter win all but seals it, in my opinion.
All right. Well, is that it? I guess that's it for the Derby talk. So, again, just keep an eye out on our Twitter, and hey, maybe we should throw something on the Instagram page just to alert the people
that we have
that we have a giveaway.
That we have an Instagram page.
Both, yeah. Okay, well, let's move on here. Let's what do we see we're going to get into next? The
Canada game.
Canada matchup. Yeah, so this was obviously a big international break for the CONCACAF side of Qatar qualifications. We're not going to get into the weeds of the whole table and kind of what everyone or how everyone performed, but I guess let's just kind of paint a clear picture for those who perhaps are unsure or unaware of the landscape for Canada. Maybe Chris, if you want to take that.
Yeah, so as you said, Mike, it was an important window, not just for Canada, but for the majority of the countries that are still kind of in the hunt for one of those top four spots. So Canada had Honduras last Wednesday, I believe it was. I forget the date. And then this past Sunday, it was Canada-USA in Hamilton, Ontario, outdoor match for those who didn't catch it. So perfect results for Canada, both 2-0 wins. 2-0 against Honduras, 2-0 against the USA. So in terms of the table, obviously Canada remains in first place. So they're sitting at 22 points after 10 matches played. And everybody in the octagon here has played 10 matches. Canada, the only undefeated country. So again, Canada, 22 points. USA in second with 18, Mexico in third with 18, and then Panama in fourth with 17. So Canada's next match is Wednesday, February 2nd, and they're playing against El Salvador for that one. It was initially kind of promoted that Canada could clinch a spot in the World Cup in this international transfer window, but Panama had a favorable result over the weekend and previously last week. So even if Canada beat El Salvador on Wednesday, they can't clinch a spot, but obviously it definitely helps. So a win, I would go out on a limb and say if they win Wednesday against El Salvador, they will qualify. Now, they're not mathematically in, but again, very difficult for them not to qualify afterwards.
Well, I saw... So I saw, I think it was percentages. I think it was like Canada with the win against the United States, they're 99.5% chance of at least qualifying for the World Cup. Doesn't mean by finishing first or anything like that, just qualifying per se.
Yeah, I can see that. And just a reminder, a refresher, so eight teams, top three, automatically qualify for the World Cup, and then the fourth place team will go into a playoff, which we now know will be against, I believe it'll be New Zealand or whoever else typically comes out of their qualifying region, but I believe it would be New Zealand. So yeah, very, very difficult for Canada to not even finish top four, considering Costa Rica are in fifth with 13 points. So it's looking very likely.
Yeah, I have a question outside of the fourth position. Does the seeding really matter? Like, what does it mean for them if they finish first through third?
That's a good question, and a colleague of mine asked that. Might have been over the weekend, and I'm not sure. I want to believe that there will be a difference between if you qualify as that fourth place team through the additional playoff versus finishing top three.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, like, for example, if Canada, USA, Mexico qualify 1, 2, 3, I don't know what the difference is for them with regards to how they get seeded.
Right.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for that one.
I imagine what you're saying with the fourth seed, again, that would make sense that somehow they're into some other bucket perhaps, and it just is seeded differently. But yeah, Paul, do you have any insight?
No, I was going to say, while I ask Chris some questions, perhaps you can research that.
Okay. Yes, sir.
you're a resident fact checker here. Yeah. So, Chris, if you recall, we wrote an article about the impact of John Herdman on this team. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to be confirmed by the goalkeeper, Milan Boran. So, just, you know, quickly, what is the impact that Boran was talking about?
I didn't read the full quote. I just saw a lot of people retweeting it and applauding what he said. But from what I gathered quickly, I think it was really just about how Herdman was able to bring the group together, you know, off the pitch. I know a lot of people are not trying to take credit away from Herdman, but a lot of people are saying, you know, yes, the team is doing exceptionally well right now, but he's also got the most talented Canadian team in, you know, the past 25 years, which I don't think many people will argue with. But I think people are also noticing, you know, how together the team is on the pitch. And I know that's maybe cliche or that really doesn't carry much, you know, much meaning, but you can tell how together they are. You know, he's convinced players to forego their eligibility with other nations to come and play for Canada. I believe Eustáquio was one of them. I want to say he was eligible for Portugal. Yeah. So that's a coup on its own. As we know, he's playing for Porto now. And then there are other players like Atiba Hutchinson. And I don't know this for a fact, but I feel like before Herdman came on board, he was close to international retirement because at that point, the program wasn't really going anywhere exciting. So I feel like Herdman had an impact on him. And then, you know, I could probably go on and on. But so I think that's where Herdman's really made a big difference is kind of off the pitch and giving, you know, the group that mentality that they can believe. And I genuinely think if you ask any player on the national team right now, you know, if they were to play the U.S. or Mexico tomorrow and you said, can you beat them? That you'll get a resounding yes. Whereas if 3 years ago, it'd be like, oh, well, if, you know, if our tactics are right and we get lucky and we hit them on the counterattack and they're missing their three best players, yeah, we can beat them. Now it doesn't matter. We just proved it. We beat the U.S. without the best player in CONCACAF, Alfonso Davies, and arguably our second best player in Eustáquio. So I think Herdman deserves his fair amount of credit. And obviously the players, though, at the end of the day, get the most credit because they're the ones that cross the line and have to go to work.
I mean, so just to bring up a stat, just to prove your point there. So Canada's took 4 points from each of the United States, I think, from both the United States and Mexico.
Yeah. It's for me still that the game at the Azteca was not the most impressive, but the one that kind of got the most attention from me, just because we know how hostile it is to play there. And I forget how long it had been since Canada had a positive result there. So
I think it was
exciting times
since the mid 80s.
There you go.
Yeah. Or early 80s, I think it was even. So you talked about like the squad and how this is the most talented since they qualified for the World Cup 36 years ago. But to me, it's the same squad other than, Davies and David. Like, what do you think about that? Like, because when I look at it, I still see the same players that were there from before Herdman took over.
I mean, yes and no. Obviously, Davies and David, Eustáquio being another one, right? Because Herdman kind of convinced him to come over. Hoylett's another one who I think was kind of leaning towards not playing. And I don't know. I'm just assuming from, you know, reports and stuff that I've read that Herdman kind of played a hand in convincing him to stick around. There's another player, and he's been injured quite a bit, so he doesn't really get that much recognition, but Ayo Akinola is on TFC. He was also eligible to play for the U.S., and I believe, declared he'd play for Canada. So there's a couple other players, too, just can't think off the top of my head, who weren't there before Herdman came in. So I think there's been a good mix of Herdman keeping players that were there with, you know, the old guard, if I can call them that, with also mixing in new players. Alistair Johnston, another one.
And the right back, right?
Yeah. He wasn't really on the radar. He was playing semi-professionally 3 years ago in League One Ontario. And then now he's playing for Montreal in the MLS. Wouldn't be surprised in 2 years if he's playing in Europe as well. So nice progression that Herdman's kind of seen since he started.
Okay, so if Michael still needs more time...
It doesn't really give any clarification. It just says that the top three, which we know qualify, right? It says direct qualification, whereas the fourth place team has to go into that playoff with Oceania. But what's to note is that fourth place team has to play that game, I think, in June in Qatar. So they're going to Qatar regardless. But in June to determine if they're going to go to the World Cup in, what, November?
Yeah, so but it doesn't say anything about the seedings.
So it doesn't. It doesn't. Not that I've been able to find. It just says so far again what teams have qualified, and I imagine that either they're waiting so that they can draw the brackets as they see fit.
I think it is based off of the world rankings at the time of perhaps. The draw.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I just want to plug quickly while you guys were talking about Herdman, again, that article that you guys, we wrote together collectively, Julian included.
Yeah,
that's regarding what I said. Regarding Herdman, just yeah. Again, yeah. Yeah.
So I just wanted to touch on the game before we move on, but Chris, I think the American head coach was, I guess, lot in the fact that they dominated the possession, they dominated, you know, the flow of the game, to be honest with you. But I, when I was watching the game, to me it felt like a Corto Muzzo special, in my opinion. What do you think?
I mean, I think dominated is too strong of a word, in my opinion. Did they have more of the ball? Absolutely. For me, though, a lot of the U.S.'s possession was just about retaining it and not looking to go forward as much as they should have. And then to be fair, I thought Canada was also fairly organized and didn't make it easy for the U.S. to progress. So, again, more of the possession, yes. Yeah, I mean, quality goal-scoring opportunities, definitely. I mean, Milan Borjan had to make a couple of very nice saves. Paulo, I know you hate the XG statistic, but
yes, I do.
I would guess that the U.S. won that stat. I don't have it in front of me, but at the end of the day, it's about that result. So more possession doesn't mean anything. You know, you can ask Pep that. He's learned the hard way in some big matches, so... I will say, though, it was funny afterwards, if you went to the U.S. men's national team Twitter, just reading the comments was, if anybody's looking for a laugh, go to the post where they posted the final score and just read the comments there. It's quite comical.
And then, you know, the Ottawa's own Jonathan David scoring the first goal with, I think, Michael, I think what you would qualify as a doink.
Doink.
And so I just want to point that out, and honestly, look we tweeted out is, you know, one goal closer to World Cup qualification.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's all. Any guys have any other questions to bring up?
Just a note, I guess, is that there are two Canadians in the top 15, I guess, of qualifying goal scorers. So Kyle Aaron has 12 goals. And Jonathan David has 8 goals. So.
Oh, actually, I think probably Chris, you're about to say that Kyle Lannon is the top.
Yeah, read my mind. Yeah, he passed Dwayne Di Rosario as the men's all-time leading goal scorer, and he's still super young. Jonathan David is still super young, so it's that number is gonna grow probably into the 30s by the time they're done, maybe 40s,
maybe 50s.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if it got that high.
60s?
I'll put some money on it.
Some Apollo's money on it.
Yes. Of course.
Okay, sweet. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it for me on this game.
All right, let's move on then. Thanks for the discussion of Team Canada, Forza. Go Canada, go.
Finally, we can all agree on something.
Yeah, yeah. Yay. Now let's get into America's favorite segment, which, of course, is...
Who am I? I don't know.
Who am I? I don't know. And a little different this week, but Paulo, why don't you take it from here?
Okay, well, do we want to go into the discussion first, or do you want to do the trivia?
Let's do the discussion first.
Okay. So, was the question for this week was from Pats of Picks, and he asked us, how did we start cheering for our favorite team? So, I don't know. I guess, Julian, you want to go first since you have a clear idea?
Sure. Mine is kind of funny, I guess. I don't know. I'd never really followed soccer, and honestly, I didn't for the longest time, even after this, except for the World Cup and the Euro Cup. So World Cup 02, we would have been about 10. That was the first one. Yeah, like I vividly remember watching. I know Paulo says he remembers watching World Cup 94, which I still find hard to believe.
Okay, I'll explain. Just go on.
World Cup 90, he remembers too.
But I just remember watching Vieri in that tournament, and that was kind of the player. I was like, yeah, Vieri, he's good. I like him. And at the time, he played for Inter, and that was it. That's all I needed.
Okay, let's do the round table. So Michael, Chris, and then I'll round up.
All right. Well, I remember before that, Euro 2000.
I do remember Euro 2000.
Yeah, I do. I was gonna say, I do remember us probably watching Euro 2002 and just complaining about bloody noses and stuff. But no, I think for myself, my mother's actually a Juventus fan, and she is kind of indoctrinated me to follow suit. But my favorite player ever, and probably, I mean, growing up, of course, but I think still to this day is Del Piero. I just, again, the man is fantastic. He really was a great leader. I think that's really what sold me on the team. But outside of, again, my mother's unwavering support herself, I think it probably sparked it. But then again, having some really good, talented teams inspired me. But I think kind of like Julian, I wasn't really into it until a little bit later on in my soccer watching career. But definitely that was the spark.
Chris, you want me to go? Yeah, so I can't say for sure that it was Euro 2000. I don't remember which game or which tournament it was, but I was watching the Italian national team play, and Paolo Maldini caught my eye. And, you know, shortly after that, I found out which club he was. I guess it's kind of a similar story to Julian. Found out he was playing with AC Milan, and then, you know, the rest was history. Obviously, me usually playing as a defender, I kind of naturally gravitated towards him. But then, you know, like I wore number 3 because of him. I didn't want to tuck my jersey in because he didn't tuck his jersey in. All that stuff. So, yeah, just saw him playing with Italy. Found out where his club, which club he was playing for. And then,
isn't he also left-footed?
He is, so, yeah.
He copied me.
So, okay, to respond to Julian's quip. So it's not that I remember, it's that there's photographic evidence of me watching the game, the final, okay, in 94. Now, for what I remember was in 98, I was away, I wasn't watching the game, and at night I heard the fact that Italy lost in shootouts in 98 against France. I was devastated because I was following that tournament as well. And then it was the same thing in 2000, you know, the same type of devastation and losing in shootouts against the same fucking team, which also developed my hatred for France.
So I also want to, I feel like I also have some of those memories too a little bit, so I feel like maybe that was just like our generation before us kind of putting on us, because again we were what, 6 and 8 years yeah. old for those tournaments, and like I actually do feel like, yeah, I kind of feel the same way about exactly that.
Yeah, so there's that. But the tournament that I do remember watching, also because I stayed home from school, was 2002. I remember specifically the Mexico game. I remember I was at home. They're repaving the driveway, and I remember Del Piero scored to tie it up. I think it was Javier Borghetti scored against Mexico, and if Italy dropped any points or if Italy lost the game, that we knocked out of the group stage for the first time since what, 62 probably. Or 66, and no, 74. My mistake. I want to get my history right. And that's when I started, you know, liking Del Piero. But I remember this Del Piero, but I never actually watched them because in Canada it was nearly impossible to watch Serie A on basic cable. It was either the English Premier League or international tournaments. So, you know, him scoring that goal to tie it up within the last 10 minutes of the game, I went nuts. I went outside, started yelling, Del Piero scored. Italy's moving on, you know, because I think Croatia dropped points as well and allowed Italy to finish second, I think it was. And so for that came on. And you know, of course, you know, Paolo Maldini, my same first name, of course, I realized that he was a great player, but it ended up being that goal that Del Piero scored that kind of tilted my allegiances towards Juventus and him playing for Juventus. And I remember I don't know if anyone used to do that, but I remember on TSN, before Champions League became this great competition in Canada that they will watch it live. Now it's being streamed on DAZN or DAZN, as I like to call it. And I remember waking up at 2:30 in the morning as a kid during the middle of the week and watching the reruns of Champions League games. And I remember I would actually watch the reruns of Juventus, Roma, and that just grew my love for the game because I needed to follow who was playing. And I remember watching Juventus Liverpool on rerun, and that I think it was help me out, it was Luis Garcia, right, in 2005 for Liverpool. When they knocked out Juventus, I want to say in the quarterfinals or something like that.
Michael,
I feel like that's right, but I think 2005 is another famous, a different, famous for a different reason for the Champions League.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and so again, it just grew, and Italy winning the World Cup, and it just blossomed from there. So it for me it was. Those memories of waking up at 2:30 in the morning, I think, will stay with me for the rest of my life.
So. Chris, do you want to comment on what happened in 2005 in the Champions League?
Next.
No comment.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that. I mean, again, it's obvious because we're Italian, that's where we gravitated towards, obviously, these teams. You know, there's the heritage behind that, but... it's just so funny how, again, we still manage to get these, to grow into these fandoms, even without proper, resources and coverage of the leagues and stuff. So it's, again, that's where the passion plays a really big role. And it just needs to be cultivated a little bit more to grow that, I think the game in general, but also again, if we're talking specifically about Serie A and Calcio, but yeah, it's very evident that again, there's that plays a huge part. You know, your upbringing kind of plays that first inciting incident for you to kind of grab your team and run with it. But then again, after that, it's kind of up to you. And I remember just a note is I did like AC Milan when I was younger as well. Oh. I liked them a little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit. And you know, I'd be lying if I didn't just laugh at the guy's name was Kaká. and that you know, was always, again, just between the two of them, it was always, you know, one or the other. I had kind of had to decide, and eventually I just made that decision. I said, you know what, this team just speaks to me more. AC Milan, they're devils. I don't know, no devil for me.
Hey, I'm pretty sure you have photographic evidence of me wearing a Juve jersey.
I do.
Because your parents have that.
Burn
your
it.
Parents got me that. Julian, burn when it. They were in Italy.
Yeah. We have a picture of Paulo in a certain jersey. So
that is true.
Yeah.
Now, do we have anything with Chris in another jersey?
Yeah. If I tell you, I have to
kill you. He's got a Rugani jersey in the back somewhere.
I Ample should have Rugani. A Lovato jersey, but that's besides the point.
Well, actually, don't you have Santon?
I have a Santon Newcastle jersey, yeah. I was president of his fan club, too, but... That didn't work out too well.
Anyway, before we move on to the trivia, I just wanted to point out it was a struggle having to only watch English Premier League Saturday mornings for a good 10 years until finally, as more resources came about to actually bring in Serie A and to finally watch it at least on Rai in that, you know, 480 def feed. But considering from what we came from and watching only on Rai and maybe two or three games a weekend to watching it on demand streaming, essentially, in the last 15 years. It's something incredible, and to me, could also explain why Canada is finally growing as a soccer nation. It only took 35 years in between, but you know.
Yeah, it's near miraculous that
it's gonna be the first World Cup we've seen Canada in.
Yeah.
We're gonna be 30.
Yeah. Incredible. Paulo saw the other one live, right?
Yeah, sure. If you want to put it that way, but put it this way: the last time Canada was in a World Cup, they played Michel Platini's France.
Wow.
Just put it in perspective. Okay, I mean, we could talk about that literally the entire podcast, but let's move on to the trivia. So now
trivia, and I think that's going to wrap up the show, right? We have that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so. So Chris does current Serie A players. Okay, so correct. I decided to take another path here and do it a former Serie A player, okay, who was played with Italian clubs and made it easier to answer, okay, because Chris has is sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit. I did not do it that way. I made it clear and precise, so there wouldn't be any guessing because it's already harder for all three of you. This was me. I probably would have answered it in like 30 seconds, but for you guys, you're not as knowledgeable of the history as I am. No, okay. I'm not pumping my own.
Did he play while we were alive?
I was going to say, are there any parameters? Like, again, is this...
When I do the hints, I'll be precise in the timeline. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So after I read the hints, Chris, start the timer.
Okay, give me a second here.
Okay.
Okay, go on your
okay.
way.
Okay. So this Scottish forward played for Leeds United, Manchester United, Milan, and Hellas Verona between the years of 1970 and 1984. Okay, just go. Let me finish.
Oh shit!
Played for Scotland in the 1978 and 1982 World Cup. He's most notable for his managerial career, working with Harry Redknapp at Portsmouth and Tottenham.
Oh fuck.
Okay, so I'll let you guys think about it.
Honestly, the only hint that rings a bell is the managerial career.
Obviously, kind of... yeah. That's why I put it in there.
84 also... was a good year, though. I remember 84 was a good time.
Okay, think about it. Who was with Harry Redknapp at Portsmouth and Tottenham?
An Italian.
No, I said literally just said Scottish.
I know, but there was an Italian with him at Tottenham.
Talk it out, and there's a bonus hit if you need it.
I feel like we are.
I say we get the bonus in.
Okay. Yeah, let's get that right away.
Have a name okay. to my tongue.
What
so.
Is his first name?
And he said this would be easy.
Okay. Now, once I say this bonus hit, I swear you're gonna get it. If you don't, then I'll be quite ashamed.
Prepare to be ashamed, Paulo. Prepare to be ashamed.
Yeah. No, you should be ashamed. Had an infamous interaction with Gennaro Gattuso.
Gattuso, yeah, I can picture him my head, but I can't think of his name.
You give up?
You said Scottish, right?
Yes.
Striker.
Is he striker?
He's a forward. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Because If you followed, it was between. So I'll give you another bonus. Hit. He was at Tottenham. I think it was that game was in 2008 against Milan. It was obviously Tottenham versus Milan.
Yeah, no, I remember the incident vividly, and I can picture him. I can picture the incident as I speak.
Do you give up?
I'm very close to giving up, and I feel like I'm further along than Mike and Julian. So yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
I wasn't joking when I said what is his first name. I still wouldn't know the answer.
Okay. His first name is Joe.
Joe Hart.
Honestly, I thought the interaction would give it away when Gattuso choked him.
Shit. I won't remember his name. I can, if he walked into my basement right now, I would recognize him from that incident, but I wouldn't know his name. So
okay, y'all give up.
Yeah.
Let me.
Two and a half minutes, and we gave up. You guys never gave up on one of mine.
Let the record stay. I don't know, Paulo. Is it just throwing out a name here? Is it Joe Jordan?
Yes.
You horse's ass.
What?
I just looked up the 1978 Scottish team. Christ.
Honestly, I thought you guys would get it from the interaction.
Nah, man, we're not as good as you.
No.
I actually had to tie it into modern times.
I think it goes without saying you're sacked as interim Who Am I host.
I don't know. That name just came to my head. I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'll tie it into the modern times. And
I know Joe Jordan.
Here's how
I know.
Feel better.
Bobby Clark. He played for Aberdeen.
post your hints, and we'll see if anybody. Although, I mean, our listeners can Google and everything.
Oh, I'm sure the British ones will answer.
Post the hints. I'm curious.
Yeah,
to
see what happens.
Yeah,
I have some Scottish. Scottish coaches on there. I'll tag them and see if they can. I'm sure they'll know, actually.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. 100%
cool. They live and breathe it. So.
So yeah. You actually played for Milan. So you actually played for Milan, and then Gattuso was a former Rangers player. Mm-hmm. So the interaction was hilarious because I think pretty sure Gattuso was speaking English and some Scottish slang came out during the interaction, so it became like an infamous bust up, and I'm pretty sure Gattuso got sent off after that.
I mean, he put his hand around his throat, so
yeah, so
yeah, he probably should have got sent off.
Is this what he said?
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
That's what Joe Jordan said about his English.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm disappointed. I think Chris was the furthest along because he actually remembered the interaction. So
yes.
Hey, in my defense, I didn't really start following soccer until about 2010.
Ish. What a great time to start for you.
Oh yeah, it was great. I mean, I wonder why I started watching.
So Julian, you didn't skip school to go watch the games or anything?
I mean, World Cup 06, I remember texting my brother during the Czech Republic Italy game because we were
graduating.
No, that was we were going to our Lerone Montreal trip.
Oh, stayed home.
Yeah, Paul skipped stayed that. Home
to watch. I skipped that to watch it. Yeah,
bravo.
And it was well worth it, actually.
Wait, so you weren't, Julian? You weren't even watching after 06? You were like it took till 2010. I feel like
Serie A, yes.
Yeah.
International player, I always watched. Even when Paulo was talking about the Del Piero goal, I watched. I remember watching that one.
Yeah, and I feel like I also concur with Paulo. I remember watching Champions League somehow, so it must have been through those means. But I feel like, again, even before 06, kind of that was my first, I guess, dip into it. And then eventually, I think you're right, like after 2010, that's kind of, even for us, like what, Paulo, when did the 10 years of glory start? 2012?
2011.
11,
no,
12,
Milan
yeah.
won 2011.
11, 12, though.
11, 12, yeah, 11, 12.
Yeah. So I guess that's literally the first year, I mean, consistently, which is very glorious. It's been a great decade for myself. But, yeah, wow. Jeez.
Well,
time flies.
It does, you know, when, yeah, as technology improves, right? Like, you know, 20 years ago in Canada, it was a pain in the ass to get digital cable.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago it was. I remember sitting in university classes streaming on soccer streams.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. And so, you know, now became the touch of your fingertips, you know, and for me, the staying home. I remember I used to look forward to international tournaments to stay home and watch the Italy games. You know, I wasn't there. Italy Australia.
That was 2006.
2006.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the red card.
Yeah, Totti.
Yep.
Yeah, and then the Grosso pen.
Yeah.
Well, he got taken down. I think Totti took it, right?
Because weren't we at some sort of graduation as well?
Six.
So yes, six, I think we were at our actual...
Frank Ryan.
Yeah, middle school graduation.
Yeah,
we were downstairs getting ready to get called up, and Chez had his phone out. We were watching on his phone.
Yeah, so I mean, I was honestly debating staying home for that, and watching the game, but of course, was not able to for pathetic reasons, which I remember hating every single minute of it, because I'd rather be at home in my nice air conditioned home instead of dying of sweat in some useless ass gown. So,
and with that, let's conclude the podcast.
Good call.
Yeah. I just want to re-up again the giveaway. Make sure you're checking out our socials for that. We are, of course, again, going into the last 6 months, I guess, 5 months of the season now. So we're going to try to have a couple, I think, before the end of the year as well. But this is obviously the start of it. Make sure you're following our Twitter at RTW Calcio and Instagram at RTW Calcio as well. Again, you'll be up to date with all those goings-ons. And outside of that, I think that, you know, I'm just excited to kick off this next the next 5 months, because I think we're going to hopefully see a rejuvenated Scudetto race. So it's going to be exciting. Any notes, guys?
No, I mean, go Canada. They play again Wednesday. February 3rd, 2nd.
Second.
Against Honduras. So.
See? Paulo?
I know there's a couple of other games when Serie A returns. Like you said, Michael, the Milan Derby's on Saturday.
Yeah, the new or the 2:45 game for us is Atalanta, or no, Fiorentina Lazio, I think.
Yes. Yeah,
Fiorentina Lazio. So that's another big one. There is also.
Juventus plays Hellas Verona, which is usually a bogey team for them, because didn't they lose last time to Verona?
Is that the one they lost 3-2 to, as well as who was the other team? I think I think you're right.
Yeah,
in the reverse.
Yeah, exactly. Because they lost to Empoli
2-1. They lost 2-1 to Verona, and and then 2-1 to Sassuolo. Those were
back. So yeah, there you go. So another bogey team. And then Napoli plays Venezia, and Atalanta plays Cagliari. So those are the big
games.
And then for a big game at the bottom of the table, Salernitana versus Spezia.
Yes. Yeah. That's on Monday. Monday. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So those are my notes.
Okay. See? Giuliano, Gigi.
I'll obviously go with my Forza Inter, but I'm also, as you mentioned, looking forward to this Scudetto race, but also the European races. I think top four and top seven, for that matter, are going to come down to match day 20. Really looking forward to that Juve-Fiorentina match day 20 game. Sorry, match day 38. I don't know. I'm saying match day 20.
20, yeah. The last one.
Yes, last one.
Yeah, that's going to be for sure exciting. Exciting race. Okay. Well, thank you for listening, and thank you for enduring us doxing our junior high schools. make sure, again, you're back next week. And, next week, actually, we're going to announce, correct, on the pod, the winner?
Correct.
So we'll have that announcement after the Derby. So make sure you are locked and loaded and in on that giveaway. With that, thank you for listening, and we will see you all next week. All right. Ciao. Arrivederci. Bye.